Hey everyone, this episode is brought to you by Ritani. Looking for an engagement ring? Check out Ritani Shop online and your ring is made in New York, sent to you or your local jeweler. It's that easy. Go to Ritani, ritani.com/sports for their free diamond giveaway.
When I hit the ground running in Paris, it was just me with a camera and following her around and basically spending every moment with her. And as Serena always tends to do, she brings the drama, and the French Open was probably the most physically and emotionally draining Grand Slam that Serena ever won. All of the odds were against her, and she still won it somehow, which, lucky for me as a filmmaker, gave me a very cinematic first act to the film.
Hey everyone, John Wertheim here. It is this week's Sports Illustrated Tennis Podcast. I thought we would do something a little different this week. Last night, I attended with my daughter as my date the premiere of the Serena Williams documentary, which makes its world television premiere on Epix on Wednesday, June 22nd. Highly recommend it. Tennis fans will absolutely gobble it up, and casual sports fans, I suspect, will as well. Very well done documentary, a lot of access. You'll learn about Serena, even if you know a great deal about her. Ryan White is the director-producer. He is the same age as Serena, almost to the day. He is 34 years old, almost 35, or 30-fun, as they say in the movie. And I figured we could take a pause from traditional tennis talk and talk a bit about Ryan and why he wanted to do this documentary on Serena Williams, which, again, airs on Epix on June 22nd, and I highly recommend. We have a top ATP player who we put on hold to make this happen. He was very generous about being bumped, but I think you'll enjoy this conversation with Ryan. Again, he is the director-producer of Serena, the documentary that airs on Epix. You've probably seen ads for it if you live in New York. It's on virtually every cab, along with Bill Simmons. So let's bring him in. He was kind enough to join us by phone. It's been a busy week for him. The question you're never supposed to ask is, what made you want to do this? But I ask you, Ryan White, what made you want to do this? How did this take shape?
I'm a huge tennis fan. I've always been a huge tennis fan, and I was a tennis player, and I'm the exact same age as Serena, so I kind of grew up watching her and Venus play. I don't think a great tennis player necessarily makes a great documentary. And although I'm a huge fan of tennis, I'm drawn to character films always. So those are all the stories I've told in the past are character films. And that's kind of where my passion comes from. And you spend years working on these films, so I have to work on projects that really move me. I have a very, very small list of documentary subject that I would want to do, and Serena Williams was at the top of that list. I just never thought the opportunity would present itself, and I didn't think that Serena would give access in the way for the type of film that I wanted to make, but lucky for me, that all kind of fell into place. And when it presented itself in my life through Pete Berg, who was our executive producer, who's a friend of Serena's, and I told him kind of the vision that I had for the film, and then eventually had that conversation with Serena on what type of film I wanted to make. She said yes, and the rest is kind of history.
You were very generous. You said luckily for me, but I suspect that luck in terms of the access was not really what went on. I suppose, I suspect it's because of the rapport you were able to build with her. I think generally, I don't want to give too much away. I don't want to sort of play spoiler alert. So I'm more interested sort of in talking about process than in specific scenes that people will see for themselves Wednesday when this premieres on Epix. But how did the rapport building go? And also, what were sort of the ground rules to start with?
There were no ground rules. I know Serena very well at this point, but I didn't know her at all before I made this. So I assumed that there would be lots of ground rules. I assumed that there would be, a whole list of them, but we got the green light to make this a few days. It was in the talks for a couple months, and then we got the green light a few days before the French Open started. And I think 2 days after I got the green light, I was on a flight to Paris, met Serena in her hotel room, and we were just on the go. So there was no conversation about what I was or wasn't going to film. It just started happening. And I do think, you know, probably the most important part of my job is forging relationships. And, you know, Serena is incredibly famous and successful and talented, but she's no different than the other subjects that I've worked with in the past who might not be famous, where you need to make someone feel comfortable that you will tell their story faithfully to whatever's happening in their life. And I think she felt comfortable, and we became friends through the process, but there were no ground rules. She never once asked me to turn the camera off. There was nothing, you know, she played no editorial part. She didn't ask me to take anything out after she saw the film or add anything in. I showed her the film for the first time a couple months ago in LA, a rough version of it, and it was very difficult for her to watch. She was physically uncomfortable watching it because the whole third act is the U.S. Open, which right. We all know she lost. And so it was very emotional for her to watch, and I think it was painful in a lot of ways. And when it was over, I was very uncomfortable because I was watching her the whole time, of course. And she got up and we watched in an empty movie theater together, and she gave me a hug and she said, that was a pretty crazy journey we went on together, wasn't it? And I said, yeah. And she said, thank you for making it. You really got me. And then she left. She had to go somewhere else. And that was her comment. Yeah. So I think, she thought that it captured who she is, and I hope it did as well.
I suspect for a documentarian, "You Really Got Me" is that's about the highest praise you could get, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, it's what we strive to do, you know. But you know, we're in some ways have this power, this control to portray people how we see fit, how we perceive the story. So. You know, it is high praise, but you know, you also want to tell a good story, and luckily Serena is ripe for storytelling. She seems to always bring the drama, which is inherently cinematic.
And you, so just to be, this was a 2015 French Open where you started filming?
Yes.
Wow. So you, I mean, I'm very conscious of not wanting to give away too much, but there's some fairly, you know, there's some fairly intimate scenes. One of them involving, I believe, eucalyptus oil. But you really got in pretty quickly. I mean, there's some scenes from that 2015 French Open that were really very access dependent. So it sounds like within days of meeting her, you were already, you were already in.
Right. And, you know, that was Serena and I only had one phone call before we ever met. And I told her the type of film I wanted to make, and that was a verite-style documentary, which means fly on the wall, just there with my camera watching things unfold. I said, I don't want to make a biopic. You know, we all know your past. Right, you right. have the most amazing backstory, but that's not the type of film that I want to make. I want to make a film following you, doing what you do. And she said, thank God, that's exactly what I want to make. So we said, no interviews, none of that. So when I hit the ground running in Paris, it was just me with a camera and following her around and basically spending every moment with her. And as Serena always tends to do, she brings the drama. And the French Open, as her agent Jill Smoller says in the film, was probably the most, Jill says it was the most physically and emotionally draining Grand Slam that Serena ever won. She was, I think, down in five of the matches a set.
Right.
She got the flu around, I think, the quarterfinals. She got the flu. And so there was just all of the odds were against her, and she still won it somehow, which, lucky for me as a filmmaker, gave me a very cinematic first act of the film.
But you didn't go into this necessarily saying, this is going to be about a Grand Slam quest, and this is going to be about a 33-year-old's athlete's attempt to pull off one of the, you know, one of these ultimate feats in sports. I mean, this Grand Slam quest, which ends up sort of being a skeleton, that wasn't necessarily your objective going into this.
No, I mean, I don't think anyone, you know, I don't think anyone that wasn't the goal. She had won the Australian Open by the time I started. And then, like I said, the odds were all against her in the French. And when she won that is when I started thinking of that as a skeleton for the film. And then, of course, she won Wimbledon. But I was really drawn to the story of the aging athlete at the beginning.
Right.
I knew I could make a film about that, of someone who is so talented and still at the top of her game, but we know there's a ticking clock there. And I am the exact same age as Serena, so I think I relate to that in some ways. So that was kind of my original vision for what the film would be about. And then, you know, obviously as the year went on and the stakes got higher and higher, that became the kind of skeleton, as you put it, for the film.
It's funny, though, because I was going to ask you the opposite question, which is, you're the same age, but you are a young, up-and-coming filmmaker, and she's really, chronologically anyway, sort of at the tail end of her career. I was actually going to go totally the other direction, saying you guys are peers, and it struck me that you were at very different points professionally.
She and I actually talked about that at one point, because I'm an up and coming filmmaker. I'm a young filmmaker, and I could never be the best at what I do at my age. You just can't be. And so there is a real, I was fascinated that with her. It's like, you are the best ever at something, and you are so young, and you have a whole life to live after this. And it'll be fascinating to see what Serena does with that life after this. But it was actually a conversation that we had. It's like, I can work my whole life doing something, and I will never be the best ever at it. And it's too early for me to even be coming close to that. And you're already there.
Right.
I can't imagine the amount of pressure that comes with that. She kind of spoke to that last night during the Q&A, but everybody expects Serena to win every tennis match. And, you know, I remember when I was telling people that I was making a film about Serena Williams, you know, all my friends who don't follow tennis, they all know her name, of course. There's a name recognition there. And they would say, oh, yeah, like, didn't she just lose a tournament? And I would say, well, yes, she lost the U.S. Open, but she also won virtually everything else this year and had one of the best tennis seasons of any tennis player in some decades. And it was really eye opening for me to see the pressure that our culture, that our country puts on Serena and our expectations. And then it was very enlightening, I think, to be a part of that journey with her and to see how suffocating that can be at times for her.
Well, keep going with that. I mean, pressure is a theme of the movie, and you just brought it up. And I feel like, you know, a lot of times athletes say, well, I put pressure on myself. And I always feel like there's something circular in that, right? I mean, if you didn't put pressure on yourself, it wouldn't be pressure. I mean, it's by definition, there's self-application. Where does her pressure come from, though? I mean, what, being so close to her, and I think we all know it in retrospect, you go back and watch that Vinci match, and that was, you know, clearly nerves played a starring role in that. What do you think the real source of this is? Is it race? Is it proxy? Is it some of the body issues? I mean, where's this pressure ultimately coming from?
Well, I think a lot of it comes from her, and I think she'll be the first to admit that. Serena is the ultimate perfectionist. She is, you know, like, we never had fun on the tennis court. When she's practicing, it's intense. It's work. When she's playing a match, it's life or death. And so I think a lot of that pressure comes from herself, that she's never happy with the way she plays. Even if she crushes her opponent and hits 60 winners, Serena still will find what she did wrong in that match. So I think a lot of it comes from herself, and that, you know, I don't want to ruin the film, but that's part of the reason that we edited the ending that we did. It's kind of a reminder to people that even after what some people deem as a failure, and Serena would deem it a failure as well, when I had that conversation with her in her bed after she lost, which was the last thing that she wanted to do, she actually said to me, like, I don't see this year as a success. And I said, you won 3 Grand Slams. And she said, I don't care, I don't see it as a success. So that ending is kind of a reminder to the audience, but also to her, was kind of my way as a filmmaker, reminding her how incredible of a year and a career she has had, and that just the latest loss should not be at the top of everyone's minds. And I was so happy that that Sports Illustrated gave her Sports Person of the Year, because I think it was such an important reminder to people not to just remember the latest loss.
I appreciate that. I agree wholeheartedly. I always said if she'd lost the Australian Open and won the next 3, this would be celebrated as the ultimate. I mean, some of it was, she was just a victim of sequencing.
Exactly. I love that what you wrote, because it's a bit exactly a victim of sequencing. We would have been crazier. And Djokovic had the pressure taken off of him after the French last year, and I think that weighed on her as well. She really wanted a counterpart in that kind of quest, and now he's on it this year. But she was out there on her own.
We've been talking about the pressure that besets Serena Williams. You know what else causes great pressure and many stressors? The engagement process. Part of it is proposing, expecting to spend the rest of your life with someone. And the other part of the experience is the tedious jewelry store shopping, looking for the ring. All those salespeople trying to get the right ring that you think is going to be the perfect fit for your betrothed. You can't do much about the stress of wanting to spend the rest of your life with someone. On the other hand, the stress of buying a ring, that can be addressed. How? It is easy. By going to Ritani, R-I-T-A-N-I. If a proposal is in the cards for you, check out Ritani. Their rings are handcrafted here in New York. You shop online. You sit there either by yourself or with your intended. Figure out what ring works for you. Shop online. They ship it to you overnight or to a jeweler close to you. And if that's not right, you return it with no hassle. This is ring shopping on your terms. No pressure. No, I can't believe that's the ring you bought. No pushy salespeople. No, you can't use the family heirloom ring. Ritani, R-I-T-A-N-I, is the way to go. You design a ring on their website. They handcraft it. You choose it. It gets delivered to your home. It's that simple. After a month, they're also giving away a diamond. Visit ritani.com/sports. That's right. After this month, they're giving away a diamond. ritani.com/sports. Free diamond giveaway makes all your ring shopping needs a lot less stressful than they would otherwise be. This is more a generic question than specific to Serena, but it struck me that there's a real balance that you go through between the subject's right to privacy. And I don't want this, I don't want you memorializing this moment. And yet those make for some of the best movies and the best moments in a documentary. How do you balance that, that the subject has a right to be left alone with, for your purposes, like, God, this scene would be pure gold. Did that make sense? I don't know if I...
Yeah, that makes sense. It's a balancing act. And I think it's all kind of diplomacy and understanding your subject. So I think my job is to understand people's personalities very quickly, and Serena Williams was no different. I had to understand her very quickly and respect boundaries at times and have a good sense of when the camera should be rolling and when the camera should be not, when I should leave the room, when I should force it. I'll never claim to always make the right decision too. I definitely made some of the wrong decisions at times. The most glaring example of that is when she lost to Vinci. And by that point I knew Serena very well. The US Open had me in the photographer's pit, shooting the match. So I was literally on the court with her. I was, a matter of 10, 20 feet away from her when she lost that match, and I was filming. I had a camera in my hands, but my hands were shaking. I was so I was so devastated for her. I said, do not get in her face. Give her her space. Like, film from afar, but nobody get in her face. And as you'll see in the film, Serena kind of went AWOL. She left in an SUV and no one heard from her for days. And I sent her a text a few hours after she lost, and I just said, I'm really sorry. I'm staying in New York. I'm here and ready to talk to you when you're ready to talk to me. And a few days later, we connected, and it was the last thing she wanted to do. I would have hated me in that moment. I hated myself in that moment having to do this with her, but I think it's probably the most important part of the film. But it's kind of just sensing her personality. And that was the only time I was with Serena that she lost. I had never seen her lose because I had been with her the entire year. So, the French she had won, Wimbledon she had won, Cincinnati she had won. So I didn't know what it was like to be around Serena Williams when she lost. I had been prepped by her team, by Jill Smoller, her agent, or Patrick, her coach, on how dark it can get, but I didn't know. So that was my first experience. And unfortunately for Serena, it happened to be, the hardest defeat of her entire life, probably. And I'm there with the camera asking her to talk about it and reflect on it.
How many hours did you shoot?
Hundreds. I don't even know the exact hour, but I would guess maybe 300 hours.
So what happens? I mean, this is a, you know, this is an A-list subject, and I'm sure there's great curiosity and scenes that ended up on the cutting room floor. I mean, do you do outtakes and OTT? I mean, is there space for some of the scenes that didn't make it into the final version?
I don't know. We'll see what Epix does with it. I always have a list in all the films that I make called my dead baby list of babies that you killed that you loved for whatever reason. But
didn't
flow for whatever reason. I have many of those with Serena. And I mean, there's tons of content that was compelling or funny or dramatic that didn't make the final cut. So I hope there's some sort of avenue to show some of those deleted scenes at some point.
You said you had a tennis background, and I would have guessed that watching the documentary. I mean, I think you hit it. It plays like you have a background, and it had a certain nuance of a tennis fan. How much did you learn about the sport? I mean, how much of this was, I'm shocked by this process, or I'm shocked by whatever it is, the size of the entourage or the schedule, and how much of this was, yes, it's pretty much what I expected?
No, I grew up a big tennis fan, and I was a tennis player, so I was totally nerding out the entire time on tour with Serena, because there's no more VIP way to experience the Grand Slam circuit than being one of Serena Williams' guests. So I was, you know, the luckiest tennis fan in the entire world, and it's totally spoiled me, and I don't think I could ever go to a tennis match again as a regular spectator, because I've just had such a unique view of it. But I was constantly surprised by the inner workings of how it all went down. I was very surprised by Serena's work ethic, and it is a job. It is a job, and she is very professional. And the tennis court is not fun. It's not fun in games when you're out there. You are out there for 2 hours, and I never talked around the tennis court, and I would put a microphone on Patrick for coach, but I couldn't put a microphone on Serena, obviously, because she was playing. But those practices are intense, and they are grueling. And Serena goes, you know, full force in them. So I was very surprised by, like, the work ethic that it involves and the dedication that she has to do. I mean, I bet she was up. We were out late last night at the after party, and I bet she was up this morning practicing. Almost every day I was with her, there's, you know, a two-hour practice every morning. And she is not a morning person, and it's a job. But that's what she has to do to stay at that top form. So she does it day in, day out.
We've been talking about Serena Williams, who was a peerless tennis player, but has shown her mortality in some big events lately, the last three majors. Jordan Spieth, not dissimilar. He was at the pinnacle of golf, and then at the Masters, he showed his mortality. But now he's back in the spotlight. He's playing for his second straight U.S. Open, a shot at redemption. Golf Magazine and Golf.com, they are going to do blanket coverage all week from Oakmont. Go to their various podcasts, golf.com, podcast on si.com/podcast, or on your podcast app of choice. Listen to their podcasts as they chronicle the U.S. Open and Jordan Spieth's attempt to get another major in his bag. How do you assess her, I don't want to say her passion for tennis, but is this a job? Is this something she's really, really good at? Is it the competition? I mean, what do you think her relationship with her profession is?
That is a really good question. I think, obviously there is a love for the game, and she grew up playing it. There's an incredible, you know, Williams family story that I think is probably one of the best American sports stories ever. So I think there is that intrinsic love of the game, but I think anybody that's close with Serena will tell you how competitive she is at everything. And she'll always say she hates losing more than she loves winning. And so I think that's what drives. I think that's what drives her. And you can imagine. I mean, she's, you know, on the precipice of solidifying her place in history as the best ever, and how much pressure that involves from her and from the outside. But I think, yeah, I think a lot of that comes from inside of her, and that pure hatred of losing.
This is observation and not critique, but Richard Williams does not figure prominently in this documentary. Was that just circumstance, or was that did he not want to speak? What was your interaction with him?
Well, my style of filmmaking is called verite, so it's fly on the wall, and I'm following the action. So we never did any sit-down interviews in the film. You know, I might, if Forrestine, Serena's mom, was around, I might say, can I meet you at a coffee shop and ask you a few questions? You know, so everything was on the go. And Richard was not with Serena at all this season. So it's Richard's pretty much retired and stays in Florida. So I was just never around Richard. They're still very close. I still saw Serena have a lot of phone calls with him or constantly texting him, but he was never actually on the road with us the way Orsine was. So it's not my style of filmmaking to go visit him in Florida and have a talking head and get his point of view. If he had been with us, I'm sure he would have factored in the film a lot more. And there is a little part to explain his absence. But it was just the mere factor of him not being on the road and not traveling with Serena anymore.
When you shoot in this verite style, how hard is it for you to sort of resist breaking from that? I mean, I imagine there must be moments where you say, boy, I have a question that I would love to insert right now. Or, boy, I wish you would take the conversation in this direction. Could I prod you? When you're simply fly on the wall, is it a challenge not to insinuate yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I do ask questions from time to time, and, you know, Serena's a difficult documentary subject because she's constantly surrounded by people, and that doesn't make it easy as a documentary filmmaker. It makes for great scenes, but it doesn't make for great reflection, because Serena doesn't talk about tennis a lot off the court.
Right.
She'll talk with the press about it after the match, but she does not enjoy digesting matches afterwards or looking forward to the next matches. So as you'll see in the film, some of the moments, my favorite moments with Serena, because I could get her alone, were her treatments, they're called. So that's when her body's getting worked on by her physios. And I would always say, you know, hey, do you mind if I film your treatment and maybe ask you a few questions? And she was a joy to deal with in that way, because she would always say yes. Serena's not good at saying no. And those were the only moments where I could get Serena really quiet without a million people around her, asking her for things, you know, organizing her schedule, talking about her brands, her philanthropies. It's chaos always around Serena. So the treatments were my quiet moments. And that's when I kind of took the opportunity to have those conversations with her, which you kind of see throughout the film. And obviously her body is a theme of the film, and just
right.
getting to film that imagery of her body getting worked on was beautiful, literally beautiful on camera. But that was also the moments where we could be a little bit more contemplative.
You know what struck me about those scenes? As long as you brought it up, and I'm not going to piss off the director by giving away too much, her body unquestionably a theme of this, and yet in those sessions, she was sort of weirdly detached. I mean, she would be on her phone while there were these intricate massages, for example. It struck me that there was this real sort of dissociation between between her body and her physical being.
You have to realize those treatments last for hours, and she does them every day. So you know, even at some point on my year on the road with her, I'm like, man, how does she do this every day? It would be so boring. So she finds ways to entertain herself. You know, again, it's a job. That's work when she's on the table, and it hurts. It's painful what's happening to her. So she finds ways to distract herself, entertain herself. And then I was always there to, you know, to interrupt her and take that fun away and make her reflect on on the upcoming matches or what happened in the past. But, you know, that's just part of her job, is to sit on that table for hours every day and, you know, go through that grueling process. But there is a detachment. I was surprised. You know, she'll be texting her friend and you know, screaming in agony at the same time, and it's like she's not totally there during the treatment. It's just part of the work.
Serena overcomes her nerves and beats Roberta Vinci. She overcomes her nerves and then beats whoever, you know, Flavia Pinedo would be the opponent. She wins the Grand Slam. How different a movie is this?
Oh man. Listen, I would have loved that for her. I was devastated for her when she lost that US Open. I would consider Serena a good friend at this point, and I've always been a huge Serena Williams fan, and I would have wanted that more than anything for her. Selfishly, I think we have a better film because of it. I didn't think that at the time. When it happened, I wanted her to win that so bad, and I wanted that for the end of the film as well. But I think there's a lot to be learned from the ending of the film, and I think she agrees with that now. But I think at the moment, we both were devastated for what was happening with her tennis career and what I thought was happening with my film. But I think we have a much more nuanced film because of it. But if I could go back in time and she could have overcome her nerves with Vinci, I would choose for her to win the Calendar Slam, every time.
But personally, and not necessarily for as a filmmaker.
Yeah,
You're
no,
talking
I have no regrets for the film. The film, I
about.
think, is more cinematic because of it, but I wanted that for her, and I still wish that she had that it had worked out for her.
So one of the great, one drawback of being an athlete is you do something well, and it's sort of what have you done for me lately? You've won three majors, and now when's the fourth coming? And I think there's probably a parallel to that in creative professions. So I ask you, you've done a fine documentary. What's next for you?
Well, I mean, as a documentary filmmaker, we're constantly juggling a lot of projects at once. So I actually wasn't working completely full time on Serena. I've had another film that I've been making for a few years, which will come out next year. It's going to be a 6-part documentary series about the murder of a young nun in Baltimore. So completely polar
I was going to
opposite
say.
from, it's a very dark film. It's very investigative. Completely polar opposite from, following Serena Williams on the Grand Slam tour. But that's what I love about my job is I get to live other people's lives alongside of them. So whether that's Serena Williams or, a nun who was murdered, it's getting to hopefully take audiences on some sort of transformative experience and getting them to feel like they get to know these people. And so Serena's no different than that, I think. I hope that people get to see this film and really get a peek into what kind of person she is, what makes her tick.
Great movie again. I think I thank you on behalf of sort of the Tennis Republic. I think it's a real contribution, and I think even her
I
best
really
fans will watch
appreciate
this.
that, because I consider myself a part of the Republic, so I enjoyed it.
Great film. Again, it premieres on Epix on Wednesday. Ryan, thanks. That was great.
Thank you, John. Take care.
All right, everyone, that was Ryan White, the director-producer of Serena, which again is premiering on Wednesday, next Wednesday, June 22nd at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Epix, E-P-I-X. Great documentary. Encourage you to watch it. Thanks to Ryan. That was a good conversation. That will do it for this week's podcast. The usual thanks a million to our peerless producer, Jamie Lasanti. I would say she is the Serena Williams of tennis podcast producing. Follow me on Twitter, John_Wertheim. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcast app of choice. Hear the whole SI network at si.com/podcast. We will have another guest next week in anticipation of Wimbledon 2016. As always, your feedback is welcome. You can certainly send suggestions, criticism. Compliments are okay, too. Most important, perhaps, I really enjoy your suggestions for future guests. We try to make as many of those happen as we can. That'll do it for this week. Thanks for listening. Again, that was Ryan White. Jamie Lasanti is our producer. I'm John Wertheim. Talk to you in 7 days.